Greetings from the Audible Local Ledger, located in beautiful Mashpee, Massachusetts, serving the Cape, the Islands, and the South Coast. The Ledger delivers information and entertainment to the print impaired from our Cape-based volunteer readers, as well as from other services around the state, such as the Talking Information Center in Marshfield and the Audio Journal in Worcester. You may sometimes hear their content, but it's the Cape's very own Audible Local Ledger broadcasting it. My name's Eric. I'll be reading you selections from the e-edition of today's Cape Cod Times, dated Saturday, September 14th. We start with the weather and the lottery and the weather. Today, 72 degrees, pleasant with times of clouds and sun. Tonight, mostly cloudy, warm, 66 degrees, a little warmer than it's been at night recently, with a couple of showers likely on the Cape. Sunday, 74 degree high, 62 degree low, a morning shower perhaps, clouds and sun, humid. Monday, 72 degree high, 57 degree low, it's going to be humid with periods of clouds and sunshine. Tuesday, mostly sunny, high of 66, low of 52. And Wednesday, 66 and 53 as a low, 66 degree high, and just plain sunny. And as we head to the lottery section, the daily number drawn in the evening was 8695. The daily number drawn midday was 2717. Thursday night's late numbers for mass cash were 12, 13, 14, 19, and 30. And the lucky for life numbers were 2, 16, 29, 43, and 46, with the lucky ball being the number 3. And the headline above the fold of the Cape Cod Times cover says, injunction to be filed to force tribal recall election. Council member wants election rescheduled within 30 days. And this is reported by Christine Legere. In Mashpee, the Mashpee Wampanoag Election Committee's abrupt cancellation of Sunday's recall election for two top tribal council officials was met with outrage by the tribal council member, who's the driving force behind the effort. Council Chairman Cedric Cromwell and Treasurer Gordon Harris were the targets of the recall, which was prompted by petitions bearing the signatures of 100 registered voters of the tribe. On Thursday, the election committee posted a notice canceling the upcoming recall election. On Friday, Tribal Council member Aaron Toby Jr. said he planned to file a complaint and request for injunctive relief with tribal court, saying the election committee exceeded its authority. Toby will ask the court to order the committee to schedule the recall election within the next 30 days. To support the injunction request, Toby said in his complaint that the recall petitions had been certified as sufficient by the election committee several months ago. The committee had been slowly moving forward with election plans, providing packets to enrolled tribe members, as well as outlining reasons given by petitioners for the recall, and Cromwell and Harris's responses to the accusations. Meanwhile, efforts to stop the recall, which was to be the tribe's first such election, have been ongoing ever since the signatures on the petition were certified in April. That includes a great deal of pressure from the tribal chairman himself to squelch the election, according to Toby. Quote, Cedric Cromwell has done everything he could to stop the recall, and he has a large political machine, Toby said. Cromwell could not be reached for comment. Trish Kelanui, tribe spokeswoman and a member of the election committee, said the cancellation was, quote, based on the language of the August 22nd court case. She said she couldn't elaborate beyond that. The case filed by Toby in May against the election committee chairman and dismissed by Tribal District Court Judge Amanda White Eagle on August 22nd was not related to the recall of Cromwell and Harris, Toby's attorney Jonathan Poloni said. Instead, he said it pertained to a petition to recall Tribal Council Vice Chairwoman Jessie Littledoe Baird. Toby filed the complaint because he believed Election Committee Chairwoman Rita Lopez had overstepped her authority during her certification of signatures on a recall petition for Baird, Poloni said. Petitioners were short of the 100 signatures needed for a recall on Baird's petition. In the August 22nd decision, Judge Amanda White Eagle said that the court finds the recall petitions insufficient as presented and dismissed Toby's complaint. The words as presented define the judge's decision, Toby said. The documents provided to the court didn't contain the full petition with accompanying reasons for the recall, he said. It was an error, Toby said. But the petitions to recall Cromwell and Harris were certified by the election committee long ago, Polony said. They didn't have a problem with them back then, and only have a problem now, the attorney said of the election committee. They just endlessly delay. I think if they're allowed to do this, it will set a dangerous precedent. You can never have a recall election because the election committee can do whatever it wants, Polony said. Cromwell and Harris had been facing multiple allegations from a group of tribal members who accused the two of malfeasance, or wrongful conduct, in connection with issues stemming from, among other things, the more than $500 million owed to the tribe's financial backer, Genting Malaysia, and decisions to keep Tribal Council Vice Chairwoman Jessie Littledoe Baird in power after she resigned January 25th. Cromwell responded to the allegations in a letter addressed to the tribe's election committee dated May 15th. In that letter, he denied that charge and noted that Tribal Council voted not to accept Baird's resignation letter. Quote, "Therefore, there was no vacancy for the vice chair position," Cromwell wrote. Cromwell also touted the economic growth that took place under his leadership as a result of Genting's commitment to loan the tribe money to support its programs and services. Genting has since withdrawn its support after writing off its more than $440 million investment in the tribe as a loss in late 2018, forcing rounds of layoffs at the Mashpee Wampanoag headquarters. Throughout Cromwell's tenure, critics have attempted to rally tribe members to force open the administration's books, including the casino records, and to protest the periodic silencing and shunning of members who've raised questions about its finances. So, lots of goings-on and doings in Wampanoag Nation. The next headline reads, WOC organizers refuse to stay silent. 10 years in, Girly Girl Parts, P-A-R-T-S, that's an acronym, continues to raise money and awareness for ovarian cancer by Cynthia McCormick in Centerville. Friends of Jill DiTommaso, the sandwich woman who co-founded the Girly Girl Parts 5K walk run for ovarian cancer, say she would have loved the teal blue velvet couch where survivors and winners will be seated for today's race at Craigville Beach. Teal's the official color of ovarian cancer. If a piece of brightly colored furniture could talk, this one would be yelling the message of awareness. It's what DiTommaso would have wanted, said Laura Smith of Sandwich, who co-founded Girly Girl Parts with her longtime friend after DiTommaso was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2008. Today's the 10th anniversary of the 5K walk run that has raised nearly $1 million for research at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston to develop better screening methods for a disease known as a silent killer. Quote, "We're not here to cure cancer," Smith said. "We just want women to be diagnosed so they can survive." Quote, "Our goal is to fundraise, but also to educate and empower women," said Girly Girl Parts race director Trish Cundiff, also of Sandwich. Quote, "We're making noise. It's the least the women said they can do for DiTommaso, who they described as a devoted wife and mother of two daughters, who sparkled with energy and joy. She was amazing," Smith said. "Amazing. Amazing." Not exactly a wallflower, DiTommaso came up with the name Girly Girl Parts, which stands for Pre-Screening Awareness Required to Silence Ovarian Cancer, Smith said. 10 years ago, no one talked about ovarian cancer, Smith said. Girly Girl Parts, she said, has helped break that silence. To make the point, sponsors are listed under the categories scream, yell, shout, and holler, depending on the level of their donation. Cundiff got involved as race director a few years ago after the organization took a one-year break from the 5K race due to DiTommaso's health complications. Quote, "I was invited over to Jill's house and met Jill and Laura," Cundiff said. "There was wine involved. Jill's energy was infectious and contagious." The event started at Town Neck Beach in Sandwich and moved to Craigville Beach in Centerville in 2015, a few months before DiTommaso's death at age 51. "The hope of surviving ovarian cancer lies in catching it early," Smith said. Dr. Ursula Malunas from Dana-Farber is scheduled to address the pre-race crowd from a tented platform carpeted in teal and adorned with a teal velvet couch to talk about developing pre-screening tools, Smith said. Awareness is also important, as is encouraging women to speak up about their health concerns, Smith said. Ovarian cancer, the fifth leading cause of cancer death in women, isn't totally silent, Smith said. However, she said the symptoms are so very subtle. Symptoms include abdominal pain, bloating, cramping, upset stomach and heartburn, reduced appetite, and quick feelings of fullness, according to a Girly Girl Parts informational brochure. Lower back pain, painful intercourse, fatigue, and menstrual or bowel changes can also be symptoms of ovarian cancer, Smith said. Too often, women delay getting ultrasounds and CT scans that can help doctors detect ovarian cancer, opting instead to wait for symptoms to recede or to go to a chiropractor or other practitioner to deal with what they think is back pain, irritable bowel syndrome, or a urinary tract infection, Smith said. If symptoms last more than 2 weeks, don't be afraid to go to a doctor, Smith said. Di Tommaso, who succumbed to her ovarian cancer on December 27th of 2015, barely showed any symptoms at the time of her diagnosis, Smith said. Smith said she first met Di Tommaso when they worked together at a dentist office. Smith is a hygienist, and Di Tommaso at the front desk. They became best friends and virtual soulmates, Smith said. Having lost a 33-year-old friend to ovarian cancer, Smith said she became concerned when Di Tommaso joked about not being able to button the top of her skirt anymore. She encouraged Di Tommaso to see a doctor, but by then her ovarian cancer was stage 3C out of 4 possible stages, Smith said. At that stage, survival rates were 5%. Compared to 95% at stage 1, Smith said. That's why Girly Girl Parts is passionate about early detection and awareness. As of Friday morning, more than 900 runners and walkers had signed up to participate in today's 5K at Craigville Beach, with nearly $190,000 raised. With $750,000 raised over the course of previous years, the organizers hope to reach the $1 million mark soon. People can register to sign up for the walk-run from 7 to 8:30 a.m. today, but organizers advise participants and spectators to arrive by 8:15 because they anticipate a lot of traffic. People can also donate online by going to runsignup.com/race/MA/Centerville/girlygirlparts5K for ovarian cancer. I know that that's a long email address, and actually, of course, we have, most of our listeners are vision impaired and are probably not going to be participating in this, but even more importantly, this will come out and be broadcast at 10 a.m., and that's well after, of course, the walk has begun. Moving over to the log, driver who hit cars is charged with OUI in Hyannis. A South Yarmouth man was arrested and charged with drunken driving on Thursday after he hit 3 parked cars on Main Street. The crash happened in the area of 304 Main Street at around 6:10 p.m., according to Barnstable Police Department Sergeant Eric Driftmeyer. The operator of the Nissan Altima, Tyler Morrison, 27, was arrested on charges of driving under the influence, operating negligently so as to endanger, and failure to stay within marked lanes, Driftmeyer wrote in a message to the Times. There were no injuries reported, Driftmeyer said, and that was reported by Beth Trefason. Man held on assault charges, Barnstable. A 33-year-old South Yarmouth man is being held for a dangerousness hearing after his arrest for allegedly assaulting a pregnant woman, a young child, and a dog. Well, that's a trifecta. Jeez. Yarmouth police arrested Dimitar R. Daskaloff on Thursday on charges of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, assault and battery on a pregnant victim, animal cruelty, and 2 counts of assault and battery on a child with injury after a woman called police about an assault on a 1-year-old baby boy. Yarmouth police arrested Daskaloff after a woman complained she woke up from a nap to find the baby crying with a red mark and bruise on his right arm, according to a police report. Daskaloff threw a toy truck at the woman, who's pregnant, leaving a small cut on her leg, the report said. The woman also complained that Daskaloff had bumped and pushed her and sent video from a babysitting camera and photos she took of bite marks on the baby to police, the report said. Bite marks. Daskaloff also is accused of kicking a 10-year-old dog continually for an extended period of time. Police said Daskaloff is in the country illegally, having entered on a 2013 work visa that expired in 2014. Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Boston said it would send a representative to Barnstable Court for Daskaloff's arraignment or contact a court officer about the possibility of detaining Daskaloff. Daskaloff was arraigned Friday in Barnstable District Court and is being held pending a dangerousness hearing scheduled for Tuesday. And that was written by Cynthia McCormick. There's going to be some road work coming up ahead. So for those of you who do drive, and again, we have mainly vision-impaired listeners, so that's obviously. But if you have escorts or friends who are driving you around, here's some information about what to avoid. Multiple Barnstable Road projects start Monday. Hyannis. Paving projects in Barnstable Village, Kituit, Hyannis, and Osterville will get underway Monday and continue until October 18th, according to the Barnstable Department of Public Works. Affected roadways include Hyannis-Barnstable Road between Bragg's Lane and Dead End in Barnstable, Coolidge Street, Highland Avenue and Lewis Pond Road in Kituit, Edwards Road, Ocean Street between Main and South Streets, Old Main Street, Squaw Island Road and West Main Street between the West End Rotary and Pitcher's Way in Hyannis, and Lovell Road in Osterville. Construction activities will include clearing overgrowth on the side of the road, street sweeping, pavement milling, replacement of curb sections, and installation of new pavement surfaces and restoration of disturbed areas. Work hours will be from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Traffic will continue to flow on the roadways during construction, and any required lane closures will be supported with police details to direct traffic. Motorists are advised to seek alternate routes during the construction period to avoid delays. And that was reported by Jeff Spillane. Former coach sentenced in sexual assault by Cynthia McCormick in Barnstable. The former head of the boys' lacrosse program at Cape Cod Academy was sentenced Thursday to serve 2.5 years in the Barnstable County Correctional Facility after pleading guilty to sexually assaulting a teenager. Richard E. Kowalczyk, 38, of Mashpee, was arrested May 28th for several offenses dating to September 8th of 2018, according to a Sandwich police report filed in Barnstable District Court. The alleged offenses took place in Sandwich, according to court documents. Because of the nature of the charges, additional information about the incidents was sealed. Cape Cod Academy officials said in a previous statement that the alleged incidents didn't involve any of the school's students or other employees. Kowalczyk, that's spelled K-O-V-A-L-S-I-C-K, originally was charged with 2 counts of aggravated statutory rape of a child. The first count was amended to indecent assault and battery on a child over 14, for which Kowalczyk received a 2.5-year sentence with 107 days credit. The second count of rape was dismissed at the request of the Commonwealth, as was a charge of enticing a child under the age of 16. Kowalczyk also pleaded guilty to a second count of indecent assault and battery on a child 14 or over and assisting a person under the age of 21 with the purchase of liquor. He was put on probation until September 12th of 2025 in order to register as a sex offender, attend sex offender counseling, and stay away from the victim's home, school, and work. Kowalczyk was also ordered to wear GPS monitoring within exclusion zones and to stay away from children under 16, with the exception of his own child. In brief, state confirms eighth human case of Triple E. The eighth human case of Eastern equine encephalitis has been confirmed in the state this year. A man in his 50s from northeastern Bristol County, the Massachusetts DPH, announced on Friday. One person in the state has died this year from the disease. There also have been 9 confirmed cases of Triple E this year in animals, including 7 horses and a goat. There's never been a recorded case of human Triple E infection on Cape Cod. Every town on the Cape is considered at low risk of Triple E, except for Falmouth, Bourne, and Truro, where the department has deemed the risk moderate. There are 35 communities at critical risk, 38 at high risk, and 120 at moderate risk for the Triple E virus in Massachusetts. Even though it's September, it's still mosquito season, Public Health Commissioner Monica Borrell said in a statement. Quote, we continue to emphasize the need for people to protect themselves from mosquito bites. And that was reported by Beth Trefeyason. NRC accepts motion to stay license transfer. In Boston, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on Friday informed State Attorney General Maura Healey that it will grant her request for a retroactive deadline extension for her recently submitted motion to stay the license transfer for Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station. NRC staff approved the license transfer August 22nd and allowed the Attorney General 10 days to file any related motions. The filing arrived at the NRC 22 minutes after the deadline due to technical problems the agency was having with its website. Federal authorities conceded the missing deadline was the fault of their agency and granted Healey's request to accept the filing. The Attorney General's looking for the NRC to put a hold on the Pilgrim Plant's license transfer from Entergy Corp to Holtec International until after the federal agency has acted on Healey's motion to intervene in the license review, which has been pending since February. And that was reported by Christine Legere. As we move to the Cape and Islands section of today's Cape Cod Times for Saturday, September 14th, the headline reads, Woman Pleads Not Guilty to Larceny. Eris Watley of Mashpee allegedly used stolen credit card and stole from co-workers. And this is reported by Beth Trefeyason. A Mashpee woman pleaded not guilty in two separate cases Wednesday in Falmouth District Court to multiple accounts of stealing through a stolen credit card and from co-workers, according to court and police reports. Eris Watley, W-H-A-T-L-E-Y, 27, was released on personal recognizance for two counts of larceny over $1,200 by a single scheme and one count of larceny under $1,200 by a single scheme, according to court documents. Watley also was released on personal recognizance in a separate case with a charge of larceny under $1,200, according to court documents. On July 22nd, Mashpee police were informed that a man had noticed numerous fraudulent credit card charges on his account dating back to May 10th, according to a police report. The majority of the charges were made from Amazon Digital Marketplace and Lyft Ride App, which the man stated he's never had an account with, the report said. The man also told police that over the past few weeks, he's found packages addressed to him from Amazon in and around his mailbox that are cut open with the contents gone. On August 3rd, the man found a package that hadn't been opened yet and brought it to Mashpee Police. It was discovered to be a brand new Samsung Galaxy, the report said. While there, the man got a phone call from Watley, who admitted she sent the phone to his house to avoid her girlfriend finding it, the report said. Watley later told police she knew this man from the neighborhood. Police asked her for proof of purchase of the phone, and examination of her cell phone indicated an Amazon account with the man's name on it, the report said. As of August 16th, the amount fraudulently charged to the man totaled $3,595, the report said. In July, Watley also allegedly was found stealing from her co-workers at a Dunkin' on Route 151. Video showed her moving a bagel rack to block a surveillance camera from seeing the personal property of other employees, the report said. One employee reported as much as $1,300 was stolen from his backpack in two separate incidents. Watley has since been fired from her job at Dunkin', the report said. And Watley is due in court October 9th for a pretrial hearing on all charges. From the Cape and Islands section, Brewster Select Board favors creation of audit committee in light of accounting errors. Proposal likely to be on town meeting warrant by Ethan Genter. Last year, after questionable financial practices and multiple accounting errors were found in the town's books, the Finance Committee proposed creating a committee to help select an independent auditing firm to review the auditor's work. The idea didn't make it to town meeting floor. Town officials decided to wait until after the State Department of Revenue gave a report on the town's financial management. But it's been resurrected this year, and it appears it will make its way onto the fall town meeting warrant. Quote, I can't believe that it wouldn't be beneficial to have another set of eyes looking at the audit, Select Board member Cynthia Bingham said Monday at the board's meeting. The board generally is in favor of the committee, although it still wants to hammer out details, including the committee's composition and to whom it will report. The next headline reads, "More to do than brew. New location allows Cape Cod Coffee to expand into breakfast and lunch service," by Beth Trefason in Mashpee. Just 3 weeks after opening its doors, Cape Cod Coffee's new Mashpee location was filled with customers excited to grab a cup of joe and a bite to eat. "We've been swamped," said Jan Agerbach, who is the owner of Cape Cod Coffee, along with his wife, Pam. A ribbon cutting will mark the official opening from 4 to 6 p.m. this Wednesday at 53 Market Street. The new location within Mashpee Commons is 4 times the size of the coffee shop they had in the Commons beforehand, Jan said. "The bigger space has allowed the business to expand to include breakfast and lunch offerings. The menu sports a lot of California-style classics, including the Avocado Benny, Cape Cod Rancheros, and an assortment of omelets, pancakes, and waffles. Each breakfast item is paired with one of the 12 different variations of coffee the business serves. And lunch items include Baja Tacos and the Surfside Veggie Burger, along with flatbreads and more. Specialty items include a waffle nut, a waffle made with a donut batter, and a build-your-own Bloody Mary that can be topped with anything from celery to grilled cheese, mini pancakes, or Cajun shrimp. Yum. I'm not sure that's still a cocktail, though. The expansion into food service was something the owners always wanted to do. "One of the things we always struggled with is how do you showcase coffee," Jan said. "We felt, what better way to showcase our different styles than to have them with breakfast?" Mashpee Commons approached the Agerbach saying that they've been looking to bring in a breakfast place. They also have heard from Mashpee residents that the area was missing breakfast food. "It was a win-win-win," Jan said. The final permits were approved August 15th, and the restaurant opened the next morning. "It was a little bit of a scramble," Jan said, "of getting the new establishment opened. But we're here now, and it's been well received." We're approaching the end of our half-hour weekend broadcast of the Cape Cod Times, and as we end this half-hour, we head to the obituaries. Jacques Jean Mislewicz passed away at the age of 66 on September 10th. He is survived by his wife, and viewing hours will be held at Doan, Beale, and Ames in Hyannis on Tuesday, September 17th from 9 to 11 a.m., followed by a Mass at 11:30 a.m. at Our Lady of Victory Church in Centerville. The next obituary is of Tim Cronin of Pocasset, who passed away September 11th at the age of 89. He served as a first lieutenant in the U.S. Marine Corps from 1953 to 1955. Thank you for your service. He was married to his beloved wife, Rosemary, for 63 years. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Society of Our Lady of the Most Holy Trinity Mission Advancement in Corpus Christi, Texas. The family will receive family and friends 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday, September 16th at Nickerson Bourne Funeral Home in Bourne. Catholic Mass in celebration of Tim's life will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, September 17th at St. Elizabeth Seton Church in North Falmouth, Mass. A memorial Mass and burial at Mountain View Cemetery will follow at a day and time to be announced in Bloomfield, Connecticut, where Tim will be buried alongside his parents and brother. Our next obituary is of Richard S. Coakley, who at the age of 69 passed away July 30th. In Cohasset, beloved husband of Linda DeRosa Coakley. Family and friends will gather to inter Richard on Saturday, September 21st at 1 p.m. in Red Top Cemetery in Brewster, Mass. In lieu of flowers, donations to honor Richard may be made to the MGH Fund Development Office in Boston or to Dana-Farber Cancer Center at the South Shore Hospital. And just a quick note, pop singer Eddie Money died at 70 yesterday. I've reached the end of our reading for today. If you know someone who could use our service, or you're interested in volunteering or donating to our nonprofit to keep us on the air reading to the print impaired, it is tax deductible. Please call 508-539-2030 or visit our website, audiblelocalledger.org. As always, thank you for listening and all your continued support. This is Eric saying bye for now.